Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Guys, we've handled everything very, very well so far. We talk about the bigger the game or the more noise that's out there, you've got to narrow your focus. And so we've been very good at keeping a narrow focus and narrowing our focus, thus far. And I think this will be no different.
Good morning, Acadia. Welcome to the debut episode of RP3 and Company. Right here on 103.7 The Game, we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We have a jam-packed show lined up for you today, myself and the one and only Cody Schutz. We got a lot to get to. LSU baseball dropping a series at Missouri. What the hell happened there? We'll dive into that. We got Lafayette's own Dustin Poirier winning the UFC lightweight championship belt over the weekend. The Astros swept the Mariners. The Pels made themselves a terrific hire to start off the weekend. We'll get to that as well, by bringing in David Griffin as the director of basketball operations. Plus, we got a ton of guests. We got the Dean Kane of Acadiana Sports Media, George Fowles from KLFY. He'll be joining us in third hour, as well as Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. We'll also have Scott Rabelais from The Advocate joining us in this hour, and our good friend Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details joining us in the second hour. A lot to get to, and we were going to lead off the day talking about a Tiger. That's right. Tiger Woods wins his first major in more than 11 years, comes from behind for the first time to win a major. He'd never done that in the previous 14 majors he had claimed. That was going to be the lead of the show. And then LSU said, no, no. The news dump came late last night, where LSU announces that they have, in fact, have reinstated head coach Will Wade. After everything that's occurred, after everything that has occurred, now it's as if nothing happened. Let's go back. The week of the regular season finale, Yahoo Sports has the report. They publish parts of the wiretap conversations that the FBI has on Christian Dawkins, who's now a convicted felon, low-level agent, wannabe, middleman between shoe companies and head coaches, as a larger part of their federal corruption investigation into college basketball. Yahoo Sports drops their bombshell that occurred on a Thursday. The next day, Will Wade is suspended indefinitely by the university. The following day, Javonte Smart is held out of the regular season finale there versus Vanderbilt inside the PMAC. He does not play. He does not get cleared to play until 2 hours before tip-off at the SEC tournament at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville the following week. This whole time, no communication going on between LSU, Joe Oliva, and Will Wade. Tony Benford has to step up as interim head coach, and he helps lead the Tigers to the Sweet 16. There was the PR spat between the two. It didn't appear that Will Wade was ever going to coach LSU again. Most people thought that when they would meet, it would be about some sort of buyout. Everything got very contentious, back and forth in the media. People were releasing statements on both sides. LSU released statements. Of course, Will Wade, through his attorney, released statements. It didn't appear that this was going to end well for anyone. And then, after all of that, after you suspend your head coach indefinitely for the regular season finale, for the SEC tournament, for the NCAA tournament, after you decide to hold out a player that many believed was who he was talking to, or at least referring to in the wiretap conversation that Yahoo Sports reported on between Will Wade and Christian Dawkins, a individual that Will Wade stated at SEC Media Day when the first reports came out to the link between the two men, came out and said he never did any type of business with Christian Dawkins. Made it out like it was just a complete fabrication. Nothing to see here. You suspend him. He's not there for the whole run. It's a huge distraction, not only for the basketball team, but for the athletic department and the university as a whole. When you have national media folks there at the SEC tournament, and they're the first ones that grab the microphone, as Pat Forty did at the SEC tournament, which I was at. I'm sitting right there, and the first person to grab the microphone to ask a question to Javonte Smart is Pat Forty from Yahoo Sports. When national media is there, it's usually 9 times out of 10 a bad thing. All this additional pressure is put on the team. All this unnecessary distraction. This looks like it's going to be a divorce. And now at the 11th hour on a Sunday night, everything's all good now, apparently. No buyout. Will Wade has been reinstated as head coach of the LSU men's basketball program. This is the statement from Vice Chancellor Joe Oliva, athletic director, on the reinstatement of Will Wade. There's a few things in here that I really enjoy. Typical stuff here. The LSU athletics department today agreed to reinstate Will Wade as head coach of the Tiger basketball program. Coach Wade met Friday with university and NCAA officials. During those meetings, he answered all questions and denied any wrongdoing in connection with the recently reported allegations of irregularities in college basketball recruiting. This is my part. This is the part where Joe Oliva couldn't help himself. Quote, the university regrets that Coach Wade did not choose to fulfill his obligations to LSU where he's first asked to do so. However, the seriousness of the allegations and Coach Wade's prior refusal to refute them could not be ignored without exposing the university and the basketball program to great risk. Protecting LSU and preserving our integrity must always be our first priority. You see what Joe Oliva did there, didn't you? You see what just occurred there? That line right there. Regrets that Coach Wade did not choose to fulfill his obligations to LSU when he was first asked to do so. Coach Wade's prior refusal to refute them. Oliva goes on to say in the statement, Coach Wade's explanations and clarifications offered during the meeting, absent actual evidence of misconduct, satisfy his contractual obligation to LSU. It's an interesting way to say that. This does not say that they believe Will Wade, does it? This does not say that they don't think that their own head basketball coach didn't do anything wrong. It's very specific language that's used here. The words are important here from Joe Oliva's end. Coach Wade's explanation and clarifications offered during the meeting, absent actual evidence of misconduct, satisfy his contractual obligation to LSU. Oliva further goes on to say, accordingly, I have recommended that Coach Wade's suspension be lifted and that he should be allowed to resume his coaching responsibilities. President Alexander has accepted this recommendation. Will Wade released a statement at the same time as a joint statement. Oliva had his quotes. Will Wade did his as well. This is what Will Wade had to say. I am humbled and grateful to be back at LSU. I'd like to express my appreciation to President King Alexander and Athletic Director Joe Oliva for my reinstatement. And I sincerely apologize to the university and our fans for the disruption to the university and the program. I regret the circumstances that prevented me from meeting with the university sooner. I wish I would have addressed these issues when the university first requested a meeting, and I'm grateful they gave me the opportunity to do so last week. This is what happens when you lawyer up and you get the better lawyer. Because remember, he had his first attorney, and the word was his attorney said he shouldn't talk at all. Then he gets the new high-profile cat out of Chicago who deals with these NCAA cases. And all of a sudden, not only do they meet, but 2 days after they hold a meeting, all of a sudden Will Wade's reinstated. You get what you pay for. Will Wade paid for a really good attorney, and now that's why he's still the head coach of LSU men's basketball. He goes on to further say, I look forward to rejoining the team right away. I intend to sit down with my student athletes and coworkers to explain what has happened during the last 30 days and how I intend for all of us to move forward. So, LSU fans, I heard from some of you yesterday evening, people I know personally. How you feeling this morning? Is this a win? Do you feel good? Cody Schutz, I'll start with you. You're a diehard LSU fan. You bleed the purple and gold like no one else I know. How you feeling this morning that after everything that's occurred, after all the drama, it's come to, oh, by the way, the coach is now reinstated?
I mean, when you say it, the whole he has fulfilled his contractual obligations for us here at LSU, to me that screams the whole Marshawn Lynch thing. On Super Bowl week, the whole I'm just here so I don't get fined. Mm-hmm. I'm just here so I don't get fined. He did everything he needed to do by the letter of the law to not get messed up. Similar to how if a professional wrestler is upset about how the finish of the match is for them, they'll go out and they'll do the match like they're supposed to. They'll take the pin like they're supposed to, but everything in between that is over the top animated and it takes you out of the match. I think this is one of those, Will Wade did what he had to do, but he did it in a way that was kind of either passive-aggressive or backhanded to LSU. I don't know that. That's just kind of how the situation feels to me.
It reads to me, the statements. I'll give it to Wade. He seems appreciative. He seems very, there's humility to his statement. Whether or not he wrote that himself or the lawyer has a team to write those kind of things.
Yeah, he didn't write that himself.
No.
Nobody ever writes those themselves.
The one from Oliva, though, that reeks of being written by Joe Oliva. And that reeks of...
My point is...
When I first read that, it's like, we couldn't... It almost is like, we're stuck with this cat. Like, we couldn't come to... There was nothing that we could fire him on based on him finally talking to us and the NCAA. Because remember, the Friday meeting was not only between Oliva and Will Wade, it was also between NCAA officials were there as well. So, it does seem to me that, like you said, did the bare minimum to get through. So now you have this marriage, if you say, that was headed for divorce. Paperwork had already been typed up, Cody. Some signatures were already on the line, but not all of them. They just weren't processed. Pulled away at the last second. So we'll throw it up on the Twitter as well. How do you feel, LSU fans? Are you happy that Will Wade is now reinstated as your head coach? We'll throw that up on the Twitter poll during the commercial break, and you can vote on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. When we come back, we're going to talk about Tiger Woods winning the Masters right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Many doubted we'd ever see it, but here it is. The return to glory.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. The man on the one and twos, as always, is Cody Schutz. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. That was, of course, Jim Nance. Hello, friends, on the call. Wisely letting the crowd noise, letting the moment breathe, instead of over-talking the moment.
Can I tell you how perfect that this moment was for me? I was watching the LSU Missouri game on Sunday. Yeah, it was going poorly. Exactly. And it hit me. I was like, wait a minute. It's the Masters. It's Sunday. I was like, I wonder. I flip over. I kid you not. I flip over. I forget what inning it was in.
You didn't get the memo that they had to go they had to go early on Sunday.
No, I didn't really pay much attention to the. I knew Tiger was still in it, but right. I knew he wasn't leading going into Sunday. But then it hit me. I was like, oh, let me go check that out. This game is boring. Baseball anyways. Let me see. So I flip over, and when my TV screen catches and brings up the Masters, Tiger Woods is bending over to put his ball down for the 18th hole for that putt right there. So I tuned in, I mean, the perfect amount of time to see that. And it was one of those things to where Jim Nance made his call. It happened. Tiger Woods is won. The crowd has taken over. He's walking, you know, up that whatever little corridor you want to call it towards the clubhouse. And then when Jim Nance speaks for the first time after Tiger Woods actually went, I forgot Jim Nance was there. When he spoke again, I was like, oh, yeah, there's a dude that also talks on TV. I was so enthralled and just watching. And then they played the replay side by side. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Of him and his dad and then him and his son in the same exact spot next to the mm-hmm. same exact camera tower. Like, I know Craig Perks had to have been going crazy because he loves the tradition of the Masters. And where else can you see that exact same setup, backdrop, and everything for a moment like that? It was the best moment of golf I've ever been involved in, and all I did was watch 30 seconds of it on TV.
You didn't cry, though, right?
Yeah, I got a little choked up, but I mean, not like, no, but I was like, oh, that's a pretty sweet moment.
We'll get to more of that later. Woods becomes the second oldest master champion ever behind Jack Nicklaus, who in 86 is still the oldest Masters champion.
Are you really going to try and poo-poo all over a feel-good story in 2019? Don't poo-poo on a feel-good story. We don't have enough of these. Don't poo-poo on this.
Grown men shouldn't be crying about another grown man winning a game. Period. There's other things that are far more important that you can be emotional about.
But why can't you? I agree with what you're saying there, but why still can't you also be emotional about this? I'm just saying you're treading in water of telling people how to feel, and that's not cool with me. Don't tell me how to feel. If I want to feel one way about something, I'm going to feel that way about it.
You're entitled to feel however you'd like to feel. I'm entitled to mock if you got over emotional. I mean,
if that's how you feel, I'm not going to tell you how to feel. I disagree.
I'm just, you know, I mean, if you want to put on Drake and get into your feels, that's cool. I mean, that's fine. I always have a problem getting emotional for someone who put themselves in that spot for self-destructive behavior. I'm always going to have a problem with that. Tiger's fall from grace, he had a huge hand in his own fall from grace. This isn't like someone prevented him or he was persecuted or he was, you know, in prison for a crime he did not commit. Okay. Tiger's fall from grace was due to his own reckless behavior. So even though I think it's a powerful moment and I can appreciate that, I'm not going to be one to, you know, I draw the line. Now, if other people want to do that, that's fine. I'm not going to hate on those people. I'm just not going to take part in it, is all. But this is what Woods has accomplished. It'd been 5,117 days since his last win at Augusta. It's his fifth green jacket, his 15th major overall, still second place behind Jack Nicklaus. He's had four back surgeries, four knee surgeries, and 11 years since his last major. And remember, this is less than 2 years since he told golfers at the Champions Dinner that he was done. Remember, that was 2 years ago that he told his fellow golfers that he thought he was done, that it was over, game over. He's 43 years old. Great, improbable comeback. Second oldest man to ever win the Masters, which is so difficult to win. By the way, Cody, you'll enjoy this. Tiger Woods' last green jacket came 2 years before the first iPhone. That's I mean, when you think about it, because we all grew up, especially you, Cody, we all grew up with Tiger Woods, right, in the ascension of Tiger, and he dominated golf.
I didn't know anything other than Tiger Woods.
Right. So, but to think of it in that kind of context, that the last time Tiger Woods won a green jacket, had the green jacket put on him, was 2 years before the first iPhone was released, just to let you know how kind of crazy that is.
I was still in high school.
It's also his first major win since 2008. That's the 11-year streak. And just another thing. The last time Tiger won a major, not the Masters, just the last time Tiger won a major, put it this way, Cody. GPS was not on mobile phones.
Oh, the good days.
And you couldn't even order an Uber. The number one album in America, the last time Tiger Woods won the Masters. I love these.
I know. I did this when the Cubs won the World Series. I did this exact same thing.
50 Cent's The Massacre was the number one album in the country.
G-Unit.
G-Unit was in the house.
Speaking of 50, he can take us to break.
Oh, there it is. So, tremendous. And also, the thing that impressed me more than anything else yesterday, Cody, was this. Tiger Woods had never won a major coming from behind. His 14, he was the ultimate front runner. He always won when he was ahead. First time he ever won from coming from behind, which I think makes it even more impressive with his age and the layoff and everything like that. So, tremendous moment yesterday in sports. We'll talk more about that and the LSU Will Wade situation with our next guest, Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate, is going to join us right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the debut episode of RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We led off today talking about Tigers. The head men's basketball coach, Will Wade, being reinstated last night, as well as Tiger Woods ending his major drought by winning the Masters. We're going to talk about both of those things with our next guest as we head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline as we welcome on from the Baton Rouge Advocate, Scott Rabelais. Scott, how are you this morning, brother?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Let's start off with LSU talk, because I know that broke last night, and the fine folks, the Advocate readers, got not one but two columns by you, Rab. So let's talk about the Will Wade situation. Are you surprised that a decision was made so quickly after Friday's meeting?
A little bit. I thought, you know, they might take the weekend, since the meeting took place on Friday, to go over the whole situation you know, something would happen Monday. But no, he. I was not surprised by the ultimate decision that he would be reinstated. No.
So you weren't surprised by the fact that he was reinstated. Why do you think it took so long, and do you think the change in the attorney is what helped kind of get this along?
I definitely do, and he added that a Chicago-based attorney, his name escapes me right now, to his – still got the other attorney, I understand. But he was somebody who's worked with some of these other coaches who've had similar legal entanglements, and I think he encouraged him to talk to LSU. And LSU and the NCAA, and apparently they heard enough of what they wanted to hear from Wade to say he can come back. And this is a calculated gamble on LSU's part, that there's not more wiretaps out there, there's not more really damaging evidence against Will Wade. But I have to believe that LSU really thinks that this is a safe route to go in order to bring Wade back, because, like I said, it could be very bad for the school, at least image wise, if there's still more stuff out there about Will Wade to come.
We're talking to Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate. Rab, to further that point, you go all the way back to SEC Media Day when the initial reports come out from Yahoo Sports about the connection between Wade and Christian Dawkins, and he has to address it there at Media Day. And then nothing comes out from it, and then, boom, you get the bombshell towards the end of the season where they make the report that he's going to be summoned to testify, and then the bombshell the week of the regular season finale. How should LSU fans feel right now, in your opinion? Because I've talked to a lot of them. A lot of them are really happy. Yeah, okay, we got our guy back. And then there's other ones that are very cautious, and they're very worried that this could come back and blow up in the faces of their program and the team that they love. I feel folks are probably maybe 50-50 or 60-40 on this. How do you kind of gauge that from the fan base?
Well, sure. I mean, well, first of all, a lot of people want to win, and they want they see Will Wade as their best chance to win, and they want him back. But there's reason to be cautious. I mean, there's something there, you know, with Wade. You know, he's on this wiretap talking about this. Called on the phone talking about something with another player, Kaprivica, who never even took a visit to LSU, ended up at Florida State. But it does sound like there's something there. There is, that said, there was no, and the Yahoo story says this, the original one that talking about the wiretap, there's no direct talk of an offer, and there was no evidence ever that Jamonte Smart knew of an offer, took an offer, that his mother knew of anything about it. Look, LSU is very cautious as a school, as an athletic department, in terms of their NCAA compliance. Very cautious, to the point where it frustrates a lot of LSU coaches who feel like they're not playing exactly on the same playing field, so to speak, as their competitors. But the fact that they remember, you know, Jamonte Smart was held out of the Vanderbilt game. The fact that they let him come back to play in the SEC tournament and then in the NCAA tournament says a lot to me that they think that there's not enough evidence to keep him out. So, so I think that kind of goes hand in hand with this whole situation. But there's, of course, reason to be concerned. I mean, there certainly seems to be some kind of shenanigans there, and Will Wade's going to be under a heck of a spotlight moving forward, a heck of a microscope, rather.
How does this play? One final question on the LSU component, Rab. How does this play with the players, the ones that have declared that we're kind of exploring their options? Do you think this maybe helps them come back to the program and come back for another season at LSU?
I certainly don't expect Tremont Waters and Naz Reid to return, but Skylar Mays, Emmett Williams, and Javonte Smart, I would be surprised if at least two of them aren't back. I don't know which two, but I mean, if all three are back. I think Emmett Williams in particular will it was just kind of an exploratory thing. And I think there's a little little pressure on their part to apply to LSU. And, hey, you know, we want our coach back, and I'd be surprised this week if you don't see some of those guys very soon decide that they're not going to go through with it.
We're talking to Scott Rabelais, senior columnist there with the Baton Rouge Advocate, breaking down the LSU decision to reinstate Will Wade. We're going to switch gears here, Rab. You were in Augusta. We talked to you last week. You helped us preview the Masters. What a tremendous major it was. Everything, the moment from Tiger hugging his son, just like he hugged his dad earlier, the come-from-behind victory, the first come-from-behind victory for him in a major. Just your initial thoughts. I know you tweeted last night you struggled to put it into words, but you did a great job with your column. What was it like there in Augusta seeing Tiger come back and win his first major in 11 years?
Well, it was historic. I mean, it was one of those – that's why I said, tweeted what I did. It's like this is a really big moment, not just in golf but in sports. I mean, you know, it was Tiger Woods obviously few people, if any, were ever as dominant in their sport as Tiger Woods was. And he went through all these personal and physical travails, eight surgeries, on his knees and his back, and dropped way down the world. And as I said in the column, telling people he was done just a couple of years ago. There was a video I saw this morning on TV, the Golf Channel, from 2015, saying anything I do from now would be gravy. Well, that's pretty tasty gravy, I would say, for Tiger Woods doing the Masters again. You thought if he was going to win another major, I thought he could, but I didn't think it was likely. But I thought if he could, it would be Augusta. He has the experience there. It's it's more wide open than the U.S. or British Opens in terms of it's not as much rough. It's more forgiving, that experience and his knowledge of that course served him very well yesterday. I mean, no one else in contention. There were some other major champions in contention. Molinari winning the title, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Jason Day flirted with it a little while. Bubba Watson got into it for a while with Ted Scott on the bag. But nobody has all the major championship experience that Tiger Woods has, having won 14 majors. But it was remarkable. Obviously, people wanted him to win so badly. I mean, people love a winner, and Tiger's had his issues over the years, but they love the guy, and I think for a lot of people, it's going to be one of those moments where they're like, I was there, or I was watching it here or there, and it's going to be the Jack Nicklaus 1986 Masters win of a new generation, that's for sure.
How much of a role did the Masters decide to play early on Sunday for the final round help Tiger because of his experience, whereas maybe it hurt some of the other guys that hadn't played Augusta as much?
Well, it certainly was unusual. You know, they'd never gone off of the sent players off number one and number 10 in the final round, and hadn't done it in any round since 2005. And it's moved up, and it's just different. And golfers don't like different. You know, they want things to be the same. They want the same course conditions, the same playing conditions, that sort of thing. So I think it was a little easier for Tiger to adjust. That said, it was everything seemed so compressed, and there were like a dozen guys within a stroke or two of the lead at the different points of the round. I mean, people who had a legitimate chance to win. And Tiger said, this is hard. I mean, and it is. Tiger has so skewed the perspective, I think, for most people. But it is amazing to win a major. I mean, it's quite an achievement. What Patrick Reed did last year, even if you remember, wins another major, it's quite an achievement to be the Masters champion for life. And now Tiger's done five times. It's incredible. But I think, no one could match his experience. And he didn't play a spectacular round yesterday. Set a 200 par 70. Didn't you have to shoot like a 65 like Nicklaus did in 86 or a 64 like Gary Player did in the final round to win in 78. He just was slow and steady, made some mistakes, but was able to compensate for them and just let everyone else kind of implode around him. And unfortunately, Molinari, no one imploded more than him. But they all made their mistakes. Even Brooks Koepka at the end, you know, pulled that putt on 18 that was very makeable. If he made it, would have put a lot of pressure on Tiger on 18. So, hats off to him for playing just a very savvy round of golf.
Rab, is he the favorite heading into the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black?
Well, yeah, he's number six in the world this morning. He won the U.S. Open there in 2002.
Right.
So he's got great experiences there. You have to say yes. I mean, the fields are very deep now, you know, and more so than in Nicklaus's day, and more so than when Tiger was in his heyday, I would even say. In terms of, you're like, you're at the Masters, and you're like, well, that guy could win. I mean, there are some players, a bunch of amateurs and this, some older players. Well, Bernhard Langer is still a very good player, for example, but he's not going to win. But there's a lot of variables that go into it. But sure, I think I would kind of be shocked. And if people love him so much, I would be shocked if he's not the betting favorite going into Bethpage Black. Yes.
And Rab, we'll wrap it up with this. Leave you on the last one. Woods' last green jacket before yesterday came 2 years before the first iPhone debuted. Did that make you feel old at all, seeing Tiger win yesterday?
Well, it was definitely a little bit. I mean, it was definitely a throwback, and no place does old fashioned like Augusta National. I mean, it's one place you can't have your phone. They don't allow phones out on the golf course. We're allowed to have them, but just in the press building, and you can't even use them between the parking lot and the press building. But it definitely had a throwback feel. I mean, Tiger, he said after the round, and he said, "I don't have the body is not the same, but I still have good hands." His ability to that's a part of it. Grip the club, know how to grip a tournament and not let go. He doesn't have the same body again. He's not going to dominate golf and win eight tournaments a year again. He's 43 now, but he still has some ability. And I tell you what, it brings you back to that era a little bit when he was dominating things. I thought he could win another major. I did not think he could break Jack Nicklaus' record of 18 majors. He's now got 15. You have to say it's at least possible, and it seemed impossible just a couple of years ago. It's a remarkable story. However you like Tiger Woods or not, it is ultimately just one of the biggest comeback stories ever. And a historic win, that's for sure.
Rab, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Be safe traveling back to Louisiana, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. Y'all take care. Have a great day.
Scott Rabelais, Baton Rouge Advocate, breaking down LSU men's basketball coach Will Wade being reinstated, as well as his perspective from the Masters where he was at this past weekend. When we come back, we'll wrap up the first hour of this debut episode of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Just a reminder, make sure to go on to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account and vote in our Twitter poll. Are you happy that Will Wade has been reinstated as the head coach of the LSU men's basketball team? More than likely or not, I think people are going to be happy. But I have questions. I have many questions. We talked about it on the program when it occurred on the old show, The Rap Game. When the wiretap thing first occurred, it was a gray area in that reporting of the wiretap conversations. There was never a specific amount of money ever mentioned, right? There was a lot of gray area that a lawyer could play around with. There was a lot of gray area that attorneys could dissect and go, well, yeah, this is said, but what does it mean? It doesn't necessarily mean anything. It doesn't necessarily mean that Will Wade is negotiating something with Christian Dawkins. And that was there from the beginning. And that's what I think happened with the new attorney that Will Wade got. He addressed that, went after it, and got his client reinstated. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on Jay on the line who wants to talk about the Masters. Jay, how are you this morning, brother?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for taking my call.
Not a problem, Jay. What you got, man?
Your comment. You said that it's his reason that he fell from grace. Now, are we are we talking about his private life, or are we talking about the idea that, you know, there's a story out there that he was trying to be a Navy SEAL, had basically destroyed his body, like tore his knee up, messed his back up, and, you know, kind of basically insulted true Navy SEALs, men who put their, you know, men who go through the extensive training. You know, it's kind of an insult to them because they wouldn't go out there and pick up a golf club and think they can do what he can do. So they know he couldn't do what he did, and he tore his body up. Now, or are you talking about his marital affair? Because if we're going to do that, man, wow, you know, that's a lot of people who do what they do. You know, it's not, I don't think it's any of my business, but, you know, there's a lot of people in our society who cheat or whatever, and they're still great at what they do. Like, I'm kind of.
Yeah, but Jay, when that got public, it derailed his career. And that's my point is, once again, I'm not passing judgment. People do stuff in their personal life all the time. And as someone who covers sports and as someone who serves as a voter for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, I don't care about that stuff. Okay? That does not matter to me. And I've said this before. Tiger Woods is the most dominant athlete of my lifetime, the most dominant athlete I've ever seen. My point is, and you mentioned it a little bit, there were people that were close to him that the way that he trained, the way that he kind of overdid it, and he helped break down his body a little bit. Okay, that's part of it. The other part of it is the way he lived his personal life. Once again, that's his. I'm not passing judgment, but it did derail his career. It did put everything into a tizzy where he even publicly said that he needed to focus on being a better father and being a better man and everything like that. And he kind of had to reset himself, and that's my point there was – he was living that kind of lifestyle. He had to reset himself, and now he's in a good place now at 43 years old, and his golf game is a little bit different and everything like that. But his lifestyle derailed his career, and that played a big role in it. So that's my greater point is that, once again, you can live your life however you want to. That's on you. That's between you and God. I got nothing to say about that. A man's personal life is his personal life. But his personal life, he's even admitted to that, did derail his career and took him from being the most dominant athlete of all time, or at least my lifetime, to a guy who was not even ranked in the top 100. Appreciate the call, Jay.
All right, thank you.
It's a good phone call. Jay makes some good points there about the training. We'll get into that more later, because I do want to touch base on that.
I don't know much about that, to be honest. So
there were people concerned around him because he would lift too many weights, he would work out too much, put too much of a strain on his body. And that you see that kind of with the younger guys too, that the guys that molded themselves after Tiger, they tend to have these injury issues as well. Too much working out, that's been kind of out there. Good call by Jay. First hour's in the books, second hour's coming up. We're going to talk about LSU baseball dropping a series at Mizzou when we get back here, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
One ball, one strike, one out. Runners on the corners. A tie game, top of the 10th. Goodwoman to the plate. Off the end of the bat. Ground ball to third. They'll come home. The play at the plate. He's safe. Sliding in safely is Smith, and the Tigers take the lead. 12-11.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. The man on the one and twos is the one and only Cody Schutz right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Tremendous first hour in the books. We talked LSU reinstating Will Wade as the head men's basketball coach after more than a month of him being, I guess, on a sabbatical. I wonder if he went on vacation. Did he go to Cabo?
He's like, Coach, we're going to bench you for the postseason.
What? Did he maybe take the family to the Grand Canyon? I don't know.
Maybe he went to Jamaica, Montego.
Oh, nice.
Maybe a little Kokomo.
Oh, you slipped in the cocktail reference. Nice, in the second hour.
Will Wade, he takes it fast, but LSU basketball likes to take it slow.
Oh, man.
Aruba as well in that song.
Oh, yes.
Baseball.
Well, no. LSU reinstated Will Wade. We also talked about Tiger Woods winning the Masters, great comeback story 11 years after winning his last major, which was the U.S. Open, when he was hurt. He had the knee injury, remember? He was kind of hobbled there at the end. Also, first time winning the Masters since 2005, his fifth green jacket. And a tremendous comeback for Tiger Woods. We talked about both of those things with Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate, and we concluded with some more LSU and Masters talk as we had a tremendous phone call from Jay. But now we got to switch over to LSU baseball.
Do we have to?
What had happened was...
Yikes.
It's hard to explain that this team... who started off the season ranked number one and number two in most publications, lost to Southern this past week, and then went on the road and dropped 2 of 3 at Missouri. Now, I know the weather played a role. I know there's some snow in Columbia on Sunday. They went in dramatic fashion on Friday. That Josh Smith play that you just heard, it had to go to review. They upheld it. They went in extras. They're on the road at Mizzou, but Zach Hess is injured, and you know I know
both
LSU fans.
Zachs, man.
I know LSU fans. A lot of them weren't exactly happy with Zach Hess, but your Friday starter gets injured. He only threw 13 pitches?
8 pitches, I think.
It was only 8.
It was too bad. He hit the first batter. I don't know how many pitches he threw, but he hit the first guy at the plate, and then I think it was like a 1-0 pitch or something to the second batter of the game, and. Came up lame, tried to throw one little toss there to see if he was good, immediately shook his head no, and Mikhail Hilliard came in, did his thing.
Yeah, 13 pitches. It was after his 13th pitch, Maneri and athletic Corey Couture came to the mound. He pulled his groin. Now, Hess had injured his groin before the season as well, so this is flaring up again, and... there's nothing that you can do about the groin injury. Like, that's just rest. So they're going to have to be out without Zach for a while. So their Friday night starter is now out with a groin injury. Maneri did say that Friday's injury is unrelated to the one that occurred before the start of the season.
I don't know. That might be worse.
So I don't know if that's good or if it's
yeah, right.
That may be worse. He said this one occurred in a muscle on the opposite side of Hess's groin.
Yikes. So same groin, but opposite side of the same, like,
ouch.
So is it like the inside of the right groin, and now it's the outside of the right groin, or is it right and left groin?
They didn't go into that.
Or is the groin all one central area? I don't... These are real questions.
they are real questions. Hilliard did come in the game. He did his thing. He did his thing. After walking the first batter, he did load the bases, but then the 6 runs scored before he recorded the first out of the inning. You lose Hess, you lose your Friday night starter to a groin injury. I'm sure we'll hear more today when Maneri talks to the media about how much longer that Zach is going to be out. That's not the kind of momentum you want heading into tomorrow's Wally Pontiff Classic there on the Shrine on Airline versus UL, or your next home series, which is going to be this weekend at the Box.
Please say against Alabama.
Against Florida.
Dang it. I knew it was against Florida. They've been
Florida's rebuilding, though. So
they have,
I mean,
but it'll be on TV. It'll be a lot of primetime matchups.
And those games are pushed back, pushed up
right.
because of the Easter holiday. So they're going to start off Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You can listen to all three of those games live right here on 103.7 The Game, by the way.
Hoorah.
So they, despite losing their Friday night starter, though, Cody, they pull out the win, right? They
it was one of those games, man.
But then the rest of the weekend happened, and I don't know, and we'll talk more about this with Jeff Palermo starting off the third hour. Like, what the hell? And that's the thing with this team being this talented, and we're in the middle of April, right? Mm-hmm. Should we still be asking these questions about the LSU baseball team? Like, what's going on with the team? Why are they losing these games to inferior competition? What's going on with the rotation? Like, we're still asking serious questions about a team that's supposed to be a national championship contender. And we're heading towards the end of April. Are you concerned at all? Are you concerned at all that the Tigers let's take the midweek game against Southern. Let's take that off the table. They've lost a couple of midweek games this year. Let's buy into the notion that the midweek game doesn't mean anything, right? How do you feel right now? The fact that this team lost 2 of 3 to a bad Mizzou team.
Better than you might expect. The way I'm able to be okay with what happened is, one, because they didn't get swept. Whether they should have won,
okay.
Whether they should have won that Friday night game or not, it doesn't matter. They won. Okay. Should they have beat 2 out of 3 from Cal earlier in the year? No, absolutely. They should have lost that series to Cal, but they won. Sometimes that's how it happens. You get that
right.
game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I take that. I look at then the adversity that the team faced with Zach Watson going down and no telling how long he's going to be out. Chris Reed's out. Daniel Cabrera was not himself. There were a lot of factors.
They rushed him back. It looked that way, right?
And when I was thinking about RPOs, how you said to take your time, don't bring him back. And then they brought him back in game one, and I watched him all weekend, and you were right. They needed to just let him chill. Like, I mean, I don't even know if he got a hit. I think maybe he did get a hit, one or two, but nothing that majorly impacted the game. All those factors going against LSU, and then you add on to the fact that they were on the road, and then you throw in the fact they were on the road, and it was really cold. And I know both teams are dealing with that, but
Missouri's
there's a reason.
Missouri yeah. plays in that environment
right.
more than LSU.
There's a reason that there's home and
point.
Away games.
That's a fair point.
So I look back at that series against Georgia. They dropped 2 out of 3, right? Or did Georgia didn't sweep them. They dropped 2 out of 3. They beat Georgia once. And that was on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That was in colder weather. LSU dropped 2 out of 3 to Georgia and then came back and were fine in the next few weekends. Say fine. They got the series victories
right.
in the next few weekends. So I'm gonna sit back. I'm gonna check, as they say, if we were playing poker. I'm going to check to the next guy before I start to panic and wait and see, because we've seen a similar kind of output from LSU baseball in a similar sort of situation. Missouri not as good as Georgia, but LSU was more shorthanded against Missouri than they were against Georgia. So I'm thinking that this may not be the end of the world, but am I happy about it? Obviously not.
Couple things. You make some very valid points there. No Watson, no Chris Reed, and they rushed back Cabrera, and it looked like they had rushed him back. And I just don't know, a guy coming off an injury, why would you put him out there in a series in a colder, wet environment like that where your body tends to? You know why.
Daniel Cabrera did whatever he did to get himself
right.
put in the lineup.
Yeah, and he's telling the coaching
right.
staff, I'm ready.
Right,
I'm ready.
Exactly.
Any athlete worth his salt or her salt is going to tell you, Coach, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we can have a like Deadpool style, like wrist dangling from the arm, like, Coach, put me in the game.
I agree with you. Cabrera's still not right. No Watson, no Reed. I do have concerns about the pitching. And my concern is this. Zach Hess has been up and down all year. Now he's injured. He's your number one guy. So your best pitcher on staff, or who's supposed to be your best pitcher, let's state, because we can make the argument that Jaden Hill's been the best pitcher this year, I think.
And Cole Henry up until...
And Cole Henry.
This wasn't his greatest outing, but...
So your number one is now injured. He's been inconsistent all year. Eric Walker has not looked good, Cody. He gave up 6 runs on Sunday when they lost 11-5 to Missouri. The fall to 23-13 overall, 9-6 in SEC play to drop the series. That concerns me because the two guys that were supposed to anchor your rotation have been inconsistent all year, and now one's injured. Now, Hilliard has slowly recovered, and he's returning into his form. That's a great bonus, right? If you can get him, I feel like Hilliard's going to become part of the weekend rotation, right? Doesn't it feel that way to you?
I mean, there
like
was,
he's going to be the guy?
There was no hesitation when Zach Hess went down 13 pitches into the game. Mineri came out, Trainer came out, Zach Hess comes out of the game, and immediately Mikhail Hilliard was Mineri's go-to guy. There wasn't a second thought. There wasn't go to Cole Henry for, you know, who's going to start tomorrow. There wasn't a go to, there was Mikhail Hilliard.
They went
and
to
then
him.
He went as long as he could go.
I'm going to say something that may be a little bold. I think they probably should move Hilliard to the weekend rotation and make Walker your midweek guy. I as much as we want to
Who replaces
root,
Zach Hess, though?
Now, see, that
you have a lot of injuries to do, or a lot of moving pieces.
There's a lot of moving pieces, so maybe Hilliard becomes your Friday night guy. You have to leave Walker out there.
That's my, if you were asking my thoughts on the rotation, Friday. I think you throw Hilliard Friday, and you leave your other two guys where they're at. Because your other two guys, they didn't have a great weekend this weekend, but you don't want to, if you can avoid overreacting to a couple of losses from guys who have been, you know, in recent outings throwing well, so you don't want to change maybe what they're doing, keep them there and put Hilliard. Or maybe the most likely is you move Henry up to Friday, you move Walker up to Saturday, and you go back to LSU baseball 4 or 5 seasons ago and you Johnny Holstaff that Sunday game.
Could be. I like Hilliard, though, in the mix. And I know they want Walker to be there. I don't know. And I worry about that. My other concern, they didn't get a hit until the 6th inning.
Yeah.
Yesterday. Okay? And this is the other thing that came out yesterday that really worried me. And I'll give Antoine Duplantis, former Lafayette High Star, and I agree with his point here that he makes. He told this to the Advocate. It's tough when you have those guys out talking about Watson and talking about Reed, right? You got to try to find a way to win. We couldn't figure out a way to win today. But this is a quote from Josh Smith that alarms me a little bit if I'm an LSU fan. Honestly, we just didn't come ready to play. You're LSU, and you've talked about this with me before, Cody. You're LSU. How are you not ready to play? How are you not ready to play? This is one of your leaders and one of your stars coming back from injury. He's been one of your best players. He's probably been the best player for the team this year, you could argue, in a lot of ways. Honestly, we just didn't come ready to play. How?
That bothers me because the way this season has played out for LSU baseball, it has not been a great season, but this team has saved itself multiple times from what looked like, oh God, there goes the ship is sinking. No, they fought back and they've made it to, okay, no, this team's back in the top 10. You know, what are they going to do now? And then to hear something like that from one of the team leaders, when in my thoughts, this team should have gone to Missouri smelling blood in the water. This team should have gone up there thinking, oh man, this is 2 out of 3 for sure. Maybe we can even get a sweep on the road and solidify ourselves in the SEC West because nobody's going away besides Alabama in the SEC West. Every team is going to be there all season long.
Right.
You never know who's going to win. And this was a series that LSU could have gotten one up. They don't play Vanderbilt in the regular season this year like other teams have to. They played Missouri, and they dropped 2 out of 3 when they could have gotten, you know, if not taken 2 out of 3, taken a sweep. And then to lose like that, to say that, not to just lose, but to say you weren't ready, like, what up, Paul?
You're LSU. Like,
I mean, that's on the coach. That's on the, to me, if you don't have your team ready, that's on the coach because you, even if you're saying, oh, well, it's the kids still have to be ready. The coach put those kids on the team. Like, you know what I mean? It's all falls back on Coach Mineri. If the case of the matter is that the LSU baseball team wasn't ready when they showed up, and I'm not calling for fire Coach Mineri.
No,
that's stupid.
No.
But if the team wasn't ready, then somewhere along the way of, on that travel schedule or something, Coach Mineri missed a mark somewhere that he usually
hits. They have leaders on this team. And that's the thing that alarms me. You have guys that are leaders, Duplantis, Watson, Reed, all these guys, Smith. You have a lot of veteran guys on this team, Cody. You got a lot of guys who are leaders.
And you didn't even mention Hess and Todd Peterson.
And we're right now, Todd Peterson's been a mess.
Bat.
He's lost his role. He's just a guy
Middle relief.
Middle reliever. Zach Hess has been up and down. Now he's injured. Eric Walker has yet to come back and return to form. Missouri had the 12th lowest batting average in the SEC before the weekend.
Yeah, there are 14 schools in the SEC.
They had the lowest. The 12th lowest batting average in the SEC.
That's terrible.
And they just lit up LSU's rotation. And you're right. LSU's different at the box, correct? They'll be different for this weekend against Florida. But I don't know, man.
You shouldn't lose two out of three, I think, to Missouri. Say if you're going to say the reason is you weren't ready. If you got beat, you got beat. It's baseball. It's a fickle game. It happens sometimes. But
You're going to lose games. Yeah.
But for your guy to come out and say we lost because we weren't ready, that I don't like that.
Part I can get with injuries. I can get with guys not playing well and you're banged up. I can take all that. I can take being on the road.
I know. Just a thought here. Okay. That's Josh Smith that said that. I'm assuming he said that after game three.
Yes.
And at the end of game three, there was a bad communication deal with DiGiacomo, where he should have doubled up the guy at first base from center, and he threw it home instead. Sure. And Josh Smith. So maybe Smith is still hanging on that, because that was just a play where DiGiacomo didn't have his head in the game. He didn't have his head. And the announcers were trying to say, oh, it's so hard to change your direction whenever you've got your mindset. No, the guy was standing on second base. DiGiacomo could have chased him to first base and probably beat him there. It just, his head wasn't in the game, and maybe Josh Smith is leaning towards that. Hey, we see plays like this being made. As the team leader, I have to call out my guys and say, we weren't ready. I didn't see us in the game. And maybe that's what he's leaning towards. Something just popped in my head. I don't know.
Any concerns whatsoever, though, that there's had to be these public things multiple times throughout the year?
That seems to be the way Josh Smith... I don't want to say
not only Josh, but they had the players only.
No, that's what I'm saying. But Josh Smith is the one who's him and Antoine Duplantis, I would think, are
Josh is more
are heading all that. So
yeah.
He seems to be the kind of guy that doesn't mind airing dirty laundry. But hey, we have issues. We're not going to hide the fact that we have issues, and I'm going to be the one to try to.
I like that, though.
Right the situation.
I like that.
Hopefully, his teammates respond.
This is what Maneri had to say. We just got to regroup. We need to take advantage of being at home three of the next five weekends, which goes back to Cody's point about they're better at home. Get these guys back healthy and tighten things up a little bit, and I think we'll be okay. Time will tell. When we come back, Lafayette produced another champion in the UFC. We'll talk about Dustin Poirier's big victory on Saturday night there in Atlanta. When we come back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen, after five rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. All three judges score this contest. 49-46 for the winner by unanimous decision and new interim UFC lightweight champion of the world, Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Lafayette's own, Dustin Poirier. He called it on the show on Friday when we had him on the air right here on 103.7 The Game. He said he was bringing the belt back to Lafayette on Sunday afternoon. You could hang out with him at the airport at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not for sure how many people showed up at the airport, but the Diamond did get it done, winning the UFC interim lightweight championship belt by defeating Max Holloway in a unanimous decision. That was, Cody, that was a hell of a fight. That was like old school, we are just going to knock the hell out of each other kind of fight. This wasn't grappling. This wasn't trying to, you know, hold off or do all that stuff that used to frustrate me about Anderson Silva.
RIP type fighting.
Right, like Anderson Silva type of fighting. This was not, which I appreciate.
Superman punches and running knees everywhere.
This was get it done. Like, this is like,
I saw a stat.
Get after it.
The UFC bout with the most critical punches or blows landed or whatever was a Max Holloway fight, and I forget whose opponent was, but it was a near like 600 total strikes in that game, in that match, excuse me. This was the Poirier-Holloway bout, was the second highest bout in UFC history with critical strikes landed. They were in like the 530s or something like that. So each one of these dudes taking just multiple blows. But the cool thing that I saw that I loved the most about it was Dustin Poirier coming to the octagon with the Acadiana flag, wearing it like a cape. I mean, just the man, I mean, the fighting spirit of Acadiana. To call back to the Alan Michaels show, Ray, Daniel Cormier is the fighting heart of Acadiana. Dustin Poirier is the fighting spirit of Acadiana. So we have the heart and the spirit of Fightville USA holding down belts in the UFC. And Cormier, after the fight, I'll say, when he was doing commentary, he somehow got his hands on that Acadiana flag.
I saw that,
and
dude,
was doing commentary after holding the flag the whole time. It was incredible.
Two guys from Lafayette are world champions in the UFC at the same time.
And they could have held three belts. They took one of the belts from DC because he's like, champ, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? But even like Conor McGregor came out and gave nothing but love and said, that's what a main event should be.
Right.
They just went after it, dude, for five rounds. Like, I was stunned that that fight lasted that long. But those guys are tough as nails, and they just went after it. And they're like, hell, the fifth round, how the fight ended, they were just still duking it out. Yep. I'm like, how do they even have the energy to throw those punches like they did? Tremendous fight. But congratulations to Dustin, friend of the show, for bringing home the championship belt.
Yep.
There at UFC in Atlanta. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk to our friend Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Get. I knew I was going to do it. I was waiting.
Yes.
I was waiting.
There it is.
There it is.
Ding.
Second hour, 7:34.
Count that.
There it is. There
it is. Put that check mark down.
Go ahead and put that check mark down. 7:30. There we go.
All right. RIP. Rap game. RIP rap game.
Oh, yes. Yes. Welcome back to the debut episode of RP3 and Company.
Come and knock on our door.
Here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, a.k.a. RP3. The man on the ones and twos is Cody Schutz. As always, we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time for us to head out to the Artco Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. I'm going to assume that we have something to talk about LSU athletics with our next guest. It's the one and only Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details. Jarrett, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, man, I'm making it. Just like we talked about earlier, I was supposed to be on a flight right now heading to Florida, but, man, when Tiger wins the Masters and Will Wade's reinstated and it's the debut episode of RP3 and Company, I had to can all that and spend some time with you guys this morning.
I appreciate that, Jarrett. Let's get right to it, man. I know we thought maybe this would take a little bit more time. Not that Will Wade would be reinstated. We kind of anticipated that, but that it would take a little bit more time, just like it took almost a week for Javonte Smart to be cleared to come back to play by the university for the SEC tournament. It did not take that long, only 2 days. Were you surprised how quickly this decision was done over the weekend?
Yeah, I was surprised. Obviously, the two sides of that that kind of ongoing stalemate with Will and the LSU administration and, I mean, the NCAA involved throughout a lot of this, they just finally talked on Friday after more than a month of silence between the parties, other than what was leaked out to different media at different points, kind of a weird way that it all unfolded for that month. And so when they finally sit down on Friday, I certainly thought that it might be the first of a couple conversations, or that it might take a little bit more time of weighing some things out on LSU side once that conversation was finally had. But instead, as you know, LSU has done with some things in the past, we end up being kind of surprised, not necessarily by the outcome or the fact that something happened, but certainly by the timing that it ends up taking just over 48 hours. And then in true LSU fashion, they find a way to release some some pretty big news at a time when some things will potentially be drawing away from it, you know, on the heels of that Tiger Masters win, and everyone's all hyped about Game of Thrones and everything, and then 20, 30 minutes beforehand, I'm still trying to get my taxes done at the deadline, and LSU releases the news that Will Wade is indeed reinstated, and obviously huge news for that basketball program with how weird of a situation it's been over there for the last month, but certainly much longer.
Yeah, and Jared, and here's the thing. You and I talked about this when the news broke, you know, a few months back. When you looked over the wiretap conversations that Yahoo Sports and later ESPN both reported on, you and I discussed this. There was a lot of gray area there for an attorney to look over and go, well, okay, yeah, this conversation may lean towards and may give off the impression that something has occurred, but there's no proof in the wiretap conversations. There's never a specific amount of money. There's never an individual named. They say the smart thing. People speculated that was about Javonte, but there's no proof that it was. There was a lot of gray area in the wiretap conversations, and it just comes off to me that once Will Wade got the better attorney, the guy that deals with the NCAA on these things, that this is how we got to this point, that it progresses really quickly. They're like, look, there's nothing in here that he can be found guilty of. There's nothing that can be proven. There's no reason why he shouldn't be reinstated.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. We talked about it pretty quickly after that transcript leaked, that it looked really bad, and you could certainly make pretty small assumptions of what some of that conversation was about when you talk about the smart thing or the strong offer, or just read through some of that. But at the end of the day, you can't make small assumptions to convict or indict anyone when it comes to anything official in any court other than that of public opinion. So as much as people might have jumped on and said how bad everything looked, nothing that was released was really cut and dry, black and white, with no gray area, like you were just saying. And so, and obviously, again, as much as we've talked about this, as much as it appeared like Will Wade was on trial through all of this, that whole wiretap transcript was just his connection to the Christian Dawkins case and what was going on elsewhere. So I don't want to make it sound like they were already at a point where someone was trying to prosecute Will, because that was never the case. But in terms of what this meant for the program and where it might lead down the road if things did ultimately expand, there was still gray area. And as small as that might have been for a lot of people in terms of gray area, and as much as people feel like they have a pretty good sense of what the meaning was behind it, it is still gray area with nothing specifically stated nonetheless. And I think that was big for LSU figuring out with all of this, because beyond just this basketball season and you know, the end of the 2018-19 season, where they stood with that, I mean, they've got to consider the big picture and make sure they're doing their due diligence and not putting themselves at risk for major sanctions. And I think that after some of those conversations with their own attorney, and then the conversation obviously with Will on Friday, it appears that they feel better about their standing in those regards than they maybe did, you know, 35, 40 days ago.
We're on with Jared Rozier of Tiger Details. I agree with you too, Jared. I mean, the fact that the NCAA took part in this meeting, the fact that Wade changed attorneys and there was no more of this back and forth in the public, he changed attorneys and then everything happens very quickly. We find out the announcement that they are going to meet. Then they meet, the NCAA is involved, and then 2 days later, boom, he's reinstated. Sometimes you get what you pay for, right? you get a really good attorney. this is what happens and things get done. What did you think of the statements that were released? Because I found Wade's to be one that had some humility in there. it seemed like, hey, he was ready to hit the ground running, and he knows that he's got to repair a few things and kind of get LSU fans, you know, back in the mix, so to speak, that he disappointed. The one from Oliva, though, is the one that interested me, because there's some language in there that comes off as – it just comes off as, well, we can't fire him, so we're stuck with him. That's how I read it from Joe Oliva. That's how that his statement came off to me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that was kind of some of the immediate reaction in a lot of people's minds from Joe Oliva's side, and really kind of a lot of the thought as to what LSU's outlook on this situation was throughout this process, with a lot of people looked at it as LSU trying to determine whether there was reasonable cause for them to, end the relationship with Will Wade without paying him the rest of that contract. And so I think we kind of went into Sunday night with some expectation that might be kind of the situation that they were in. And I mean, as you were saying, I don't know that Oliva's statement was necessarily as exciting for LSU fans or as warm and fuzzy as some aspects of Will Wade's were. But at the end of the day, here's where we are. And regardless of what those statements say and how positive they are or how kind of, I guess, hesitant certain words may seem, you know, Will Wade's back, and so that's all well and good to an extent, but there are going to be some relationships over in that department, particularly as it pertains to that basketball program, that a couple people are going to have to work through.
Jarrett, how do you think this is going to play with the guys that have declared? We anticipate Naz Reid, he's going to be projected as a first-round pick, and Tremont Waters is probably both gone. Both of those guys have declared and hired agents. Other guys, Skylar Mays, the heartbeat of this team, Javonte Smart and Emmett Williams. And Emmett's even come out and said, look, I'm just going to go through this process. I'm going to be coming back. He's essentially said that over the weekend. But those other three guys, Emmett, Javonte, and Skylar, do you anticipate them now coming back knowing that they have Will Wade as their coach?
I think it certainly helps. Just as we've been talking about for a while now, the two big variables for a lot of those guys that were more on the fence, both in terms of where they leaned for their next year and where they may end up drafted, the two variables that would come into play with whether they may ultimately end up back in purple and gold for another season were, yes, where they ended up finding out their NBA draft spot landed, which for anyone other than Naz Reid right now looks like there's a strong chance they would go undrafted. And then with the future the program looked like from a just a program standpoint and avoiding any sanctions that people had started to wonder whether those might be coming down the line, as well as what the leadership of the program looked like because of how strong the relationships were with between Will Wade and all of those guys. And so to have Will announced back at the helm, still with plenty of time for those guys to have some discussions with him and their families and just kind of review some things as they go through this pre-draft process, I think is big from a relationship standpoint, as well as a sense that things might be okay moving forward from a program standpoint. And so I think that moves all of those guys a little bit closer to potentially coming back. They'll continue to go through this process and get as much information from the NBA guys as possible and make sure that they have an informed decision. But I think the news Sunday night was unquestionably a big pro in the, you know, the pros and cons list of coming back to school if things continue to develop the way they appear they will in the pre-draft process.
Jarrett, I appreciate you coming on, brother, as always. Sad that you missed your flight, man, but have a tremendous week regardless, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, man, always a pleasure, and congrats to you guys on debuting the New Look Show.
Thanks, man. Jarrett Rozier, pros pro from Tiger Details, helping us break down the LSU basketball situation.
You know what he did? He's like, he pulled a thing to where when you get away with, like, your mom letting you stay home sick from school when you're not sick, you get away with that. You got to stay home, but then you still decided to, like, I don't know, write your paper or do your homework or something like that. You know what I mean? He had the excuse. He got on the he had a flight. He couldn't make the show.
Didn't have to, and yet he still
he missed this, and then wanted to come. I mean, I tell you what, the world needs more Jarrett Rozers.
There it is. When we come back here, we will wrap up this second hour of RP3 and Company as the Astros, as we predicted, went on the road, took down the April champs, Seattle Mariners, sweeping the M's there on the road in the Pacific Northwest. We'll talk more about that here on 103.7 The Game.
And the first pitch is driven into left field, and that ball is gone! Alebis Diaz on the first pitch lines one out to left field, and the Astros go on top 3-2.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing.
I wonder how many times we've accidentally done Rap Game and neither one of us noticed. Because now that sounded, that hit my ear weird. So it's like, have we not been? I hope we haven't. God, that'd be a
bad. I've been too good. I had the one screw up. I was practicing over the weekend. Admittedly so. I was practicing over the weekend. My wife's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm trying not to screw up on Monday.
Well, you know.
She's like, you got nothing to be worried about. You and Cody are going to be great. It's just rebranding this. I know. It's the logistics of
the move.
I know. I also, Millie, I was more nervous, though. This is a side note. We're going to derail our talk here. I was more nervous yesterday in church because I had to read on Palm Sunday the scripture. Ooh. Like, my pastor asked me to get up there and read in front of everyone. And my wife's like, you're so nervous. I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. She goes, you talk on the radio every day. What's the problem? I says, that's different. I'm talking about sports. I can BS about sports for 3 hours. I'm up here talking about God and Jesus. That's a whole different thing, man. That's a different type of pressure.
I was that kid in elementary school that, you know, I went to a Catholic school, so we had a choir, and all the kids had to sing in the little choir and whatnot. And I guess I was like the only boy in the class that was willing to stand up in front of everyone, you know, and sing the little hallelujah and all that during our school masses and stuff. So it's like, now when I go and I still see my old choir teacher, who she's still teaching at the school, she's like, oh, you know, how are you doing? I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm on the radio. I knew. And she's like, not surprised. Not surprised. She's like, you were always the one that was wanted to be out up in front of everybody. And da-da-da. Looking back on it now, I pray to God my son, if I have a son, he doesn't ever have to sing in front of a church of his peers.
My civics teacher in high school had a conference with me and two of my friends. And his comment was, Raymond, you have a voice that can wake the dead in the cemetery. So even when you try to be quiet, it's not working.
He was politely telling you to shut up.
He liked me. He was like, Raymond, I like you. You just got to learn how to be quiet, man.
My civics teacher, we had a soccer game. We got to leave a little early from school, and his class was sixth period. We had seven periods. And so instead of just bailing on seventh, we bailed on sixth period too, and we're going to hang out in the gym until it was time to go and everything. And then the principal comes in afterwards and he's like, guys, you know, we're not dumb, right? And he starts railing into us, is not the way I want to put it, but telling us, you did wrong. You left in the extra period. You left sex. So it was one of those things where he's like, we like you, but you have to be a little bit fussed at now. And it was kind of sad.
I left school. I did not come back from lunch one time, a group of us, because I volunteered to go with a couple of my buddies to go get Tupac's All Eyes on Me double CD that came out when it debuted, and we drove all the way to Terre Haute, Indiana, which was like 30 minutes away to go get it. And we got tapes and CDs and brought back for all of our friends in our little town.
Are Tupac albums really flying off the shelves in Terre Haute, Indiana?
They were back then. Dude, we came back with like a dozen and a half copies. Like, everyone knew that we were going. It was like we were making a run to the liquor store.
So you're the reason now when new cool hot items drop, limit two per customer.
Like, you are the reason now we have that little tagline. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Unappreciated.
You're welcome. To get things back on track, because I knew I was going to take us off track there.
That's a rare occurrence. You did that. I didn't fight it, but you did that.
The Astros got back on track, or they stayed on track, rather, as they built off of their sweep of the Yankees at home at the Juice Box by going on the road and taking three straight games from the Seattle Mariners. Now, the Mariners are still technically ahead of them in the AL West standings, but the Astros are only now a game back, and there's no real big theatrics. They just have won eight straight games. Your Houston Astros have now won eight straight games, and they did it by just going after them. Look, they started off the season sluggish, 2-5 overall. And now Houston has won its last nine games after a 2-5 start. For the first time in six games, Jose Altuve did not bomb a baseball over the fence. In the six, with Alex Bregman on deck, he did hit one through to bring in a run. This team is playing so well. They've gotten over the early season slump. Jose Altuve is bombing balls. Bregman is starting to hit well. And the pitching staff is performing well. So Houston Astros, go on the road, get the sweep of the Mariners. Third hour of RP3 and Company coming up right now on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of this debut episode of RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, previously of the Rap Game with RP3. The man on the ones and twos is Cody Schutz, and we'll be broadcasting live right here from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing on 103.7 The Game, every weekday morning from 6 to 9 o'clock, bringing you the biggest names in Louisiana sports.
A very nice time, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on one of those big names involved in Louisiana sports with our good friend, the co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, the one and only Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, sir. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Crazy weekend. Definitely a tremendous finish to the weekend on all fronts. And I want to get your insight on a litany of things. But, Jeff, let's start with the decision that was made, or the announcement that came last night, yesterday evening rather, when LSU has decided to reinstate Will Wade. The drama of all that has finally come to an end. Both sides released a statement jointly. Your thoughts on the statements, your thoughts on the decision that was made.
Well, we'll see if the drama's all over with. You have to wonder how Will Wade and Joe Oliva move forward from here. In Joe Oliva's statement, it didn't sound like, you know, maybe you were looking for the sentence of, we're pleased to announce that Will Wade is back as the men's basketball coach, and that line was never in that three-paragraph or whatever it was statement. It was just kind of the reasoning, which for right now, I guess it does suffice on him coming back. It will be interesting to hear Will Wade speak for the first time, because obviously he'll be asked a ton of questions regarding this, and kind of what his thoughts and feelings on this. Is this something that both sides can move past and move on, and Coach Will Wade can continue to be a successful basketball coach? Or is this something that's going to remain in the background here, and eventually Will Wade will, once he puts maybe another season together, or puts at least another season behind him at LSU, looks for somewhere else where he's got a clean slate to work with. Also, what if something else comes out here? What if whoever is leaking the information from this purported FBI wiretap, what if they release more information to the folks over at Yahoo Sports? So that may occur as well. So this saga, as it has been labeled by many, I don't know if it's certainly done yet, but for right now, Will Wade's the basketball coach, and he's got a lot of work ahead of him.
We're talking to Jeff Palermo. Jeff, what's been the reaction for the fan base? I know just personally talking to diehard fans, many of them are happy. Hey, we got our guy, we got our coach, so forth and so forth. But there's other guys, other fans, that have some trepidation because they are worried about something else, the other shoe dropping. What's your reaction been with the diehard Tiger faithful?
Well, and I think the other reaction is, well, why did they suspend him at all to begin with?
True.
If I think, well, why did LSU go through this? Why did they? And Joe Leva obviously tries to explain it in the statement that they needed Will Wade to come talk with him before they could move forward. And since Will Wade decided not to, we had this 5-week-long suspension. And then, so you also have to ask, did the first lawyer that Will Wade had during this proceeding, did he screw up? I mean, that's a question that needs to be asked as well. I think obviously most fans are, I think, excited that he was there. LSU tried to protect itself as far as possible sanctions down the line by having an NCAA official in the meeting on Friday with Joe Leva. That was made clear in the statement released by Joe Leva that there was an NCAA official there. So since he denied any wrongdoing, and then also LSU did its own searching in this thing when they looked into Javonte Smart and they held him out for a game. So really it seems like to me that all they needed to hear to bring Will Wade back was a denial, and that's what they got, because they have not, as Joe Leva said, they have not been able to find any type of evidence that shows that there was any kind of irregularity when it comes to college basketball recruiting. So since Will Wade has denied it, there's no evidence. And as Joe Leva says, based on his contract, they can't continue to suspend him. So I think LSU is still concerned. The administration is certainly concerned. But for right now, they're going to let this play out. They feel like they've protected themselves as much as possible, and they're willing to wait and see what might happen here. They hope that eventually this thing is behind them, but you're right. You never know if another shoe may drop in all of this.
We're talking to Jeff Palermo. He's the co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff, do you believe that this will help kind of bring some of those guys back that have declared? I know Emmett Williams has basically said, look, I'm coming back. I just want to go through this process to see what I need to get better at, right? So we know he's going to come back. We know Skylar Mays loves LSU. He's the heartbeat of this team. But do you expect Skylar, Javonte, and now Emmett to kind of come back to the fold, to the team, and be there for Will Wade to build on for next season?
I still think those guys are going to go through the process. And they may have decided to go through the process regardless of what would have happened to Will Wade. I think it made their decision a little bit easier to do it, since as long as you follow certain protocols, you're allowed to come back now and test this out and actually work out for teams and go to the scouting combine. And so if you're a player and you got aspirations for the NBA and you had a really good season and you want to kind of get a better sense of where you are when it comes to possibly playing in the NBA, why not go through this? So, but for sure, I think now that these three players in particular that we just mentioned, Skylar Mays, Emmett Williams, and Javonte Smart, Now that they see that Will Wade is back, I think there's a good chance that maybe two of them come back. We'll wait and see. I agree. I think Emmett Williams is a guy that most certainly will come back. Skylar Mays put up a really good season, and there's a lot of things Skylar Mays can do. I mean, he's a decent shooter, maybe not a great shooter. He can get to the rim off the dribble. He's a good defender. He's also got aspirations of just not playing NBA basketball. He wants to get into the medical profession. So he's 1 year away from getting his degree. Who knows? He might be just a semester or two short. Might be able to wrap it up by the time December comes around and then start grad school while he completes his senior year of eligibility. So I think that there's something to weigh there for Skylar Mays. And Javonte Smart, I don't think he's certainly ready for the NBA just yet. So maybe he might come back as well. So that would be good because right now LSU needs about as much help as they can get at this point.
Jeff, I want to switch over to the baseball team. It's a head-scratcher for me of what occurred there in Columbia. I know the temperature played a role. I know that it's a road series in the SEC. But this was the 12th worst batting team in the SEC out of 14 teams. And they had no problems with LSU's pitching. I know Zach Hess got injured. He's injured his groin. We don't know how long he's going to be out for. They win the first game, then they drop the next two. What's going on with the LSU baseball team?
Well, I think injuries are a big part of this. And obviously, you know the cliche. You don't want to make injuries as an excuse. But that injury to Zach Hess certainly hurt. And then it took a while for Mikhail Hilliard to get it going. But once he settled down, and LSU's bats obviously had a nice night on Friday night. Everything worked out okay in that game. Eric Walker, I would say, is a bit of a concern. That was not a good outing for him. Now, the last couple of starts after pitching seven great innings against Mississippi State a couple of weeks ago, his start last week against Texas A&M, I think he only went four innings or so, and this time he gets roughed up. That's a bit of a concern, and now that you're losing Zach Hess, all of a sudden what seemed to be a stable weekend rotation, you got all these question marks. Yeah, Cole Henry's been good. He's really been the most consistent starter that LSU's had all season long, so you can count on him, and he may have to start on Thursday night in this upcoming series against Florida. But, yeah, this is what seemed to be like everything heading in the right direction is now a big concern. It doesn't seem like Zach Watson and Chris Reed's injuries are anything long-term, but it obviously impacted them, I think, in the last two games, not having those guys out there. And then Daniel Cabrera, he is not – I don't think he's 100% either. He had missed seven games with his wrist-slash-hand injury, comes back this weekend, he only got a couple of hits. He struck out eight times over the course of the three games. So you're losing if you don't have a Daniel Cabrera that's not right, and you don't have Zach Watson, you don't have Chris Reed, that's really tough for this team to overcome. And we talked about it a lot last year when Josh Smith missed most of the season and everybody wondering what's wrong with LSU. And you know, it said it at the same time. You take away one of any team's best hitter for most of the season, they're not going to operate as well as you think they're supposed to do. And that same thing happened here. Eric Walker is a concern, and now really this entire starting pitching because of all these injuries that they have, and you still got some relievers that are Landon Marceau and Jaden Hill. They're down with arm soreness, so these guys got to get healthy here quick. Today's April 15th, and usually this is, at this point, this is go time. This is where the baseball program turns it up another notch, and right now they got to really deal with a slew of injuries here that have hit the team.
Talking to Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Ag Radio. Jeff, that being said, what do you anticipate tomorrow night there on the Shrine on Airline for the Wally Pontiff Classic when LSU takes on UL? Both of these teams have had their struggles. Who do we anticipate that's going to be taking the bump for LSU, and what kind of focus and effort do you anticipate from the Tigers?
Well, you might need Mikhail Hilliard to start one of the games this weekend, and he's been your midweek starter here lately. I would think it might be Clay Moffitt gets a chance to start tomorrow. He's been really good this season. He hasn't given up an earned run. This might be his opportunity. You hope to get guys like Zach Watson back and Chris Reed back. I mean, that's a big part of your offense that you're missing. I would say probably the Cajuns are playing a little bit better, right, you know, at least based on the fact that they won back-to-back series here. They're probably feeling a little bit better about themselves than LSU, as the Tigers are just trying to find themselves here. I think if LSU can get all the pieces back in place and Zach Hess doesn't miss a lot of time and you can get Cabrera swinging the bat well and Watson and Reed are not out that long, I think everything can stabilize itself. It just might be Eric Walker's going through a little bit of a midseason slump here, and he can figure it out here by the time postseason play comes around. So not everything is lost for the LSU baseball team, but they've hit some rough waters here, and they got to hope that they get some guys back healthy and to help them out. But tomorrow night should be a fun game because you got two teams now at this point. There is a little bit of a desperation here. You know, the Cajuns are trying to turn their season around, and I don't think LSU wants to lose any more midweek games. They've suffered some really bad losses here against Southern, Northwestern State, and McNeese.
Jeff, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Great insight. Enjoy the game tomorrow and enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right. Thanks a lot, Raymond.
That's Jeff Palermo breaking down LSU men's basketball decision to bring back Will Wade, as well as the woes of the LSU baseball team this past week. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk about the Pelicans made a great hire, tremendous hire. David Griffin, as the director of basketball operations, will dive into that right here on 103.7 The Game. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. Look, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or even a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. Call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. The man on the 1 and 2s is Cody Schutz. Reminder, we got something special for you lined up for tomorrow. We already talked about with Jeff Palermo, the Wally Poniff Classic, right? Down there at the Shrine on Airline. We're going to get the Cajuns' perspective on that from our good friend George Faust coming up. But programming reminder, the good brother himself, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, he's going to be broadcasting live tomorrow from the Shrine on Airline. He's going to be hosting Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 6:30 p.m. He's going to lead you into LSU pregame, first pitch at 7. So you can listen to Ben Love right down there on the Shrine on Airline and then listen to the game right afterwards. He's got a slew of guests lined up, including Wally Poniff Sr. He's going to lead things off at 4 o'clock tomorrow. So make sure to listen to Bumper Sports tomorrow right here on 103.7 The Game. The New Orleans Pelicans made a tremendous move to start off the weekend. We were unable to get to it because it occurred after our show was off the air on Friday. but they actually hired themselves a basketball man, which I said they needed to do. The whole thing with the Anthony Davis drama that helped derail the season, and the season was already heading in that direction before the trade demand, was getting rid of Dill Demps was going to be a good thing. That was going to be a silver lining, that you actually needed to bring in a competent individual to run your franchise. You needed a legit director of basketball operations, not have Mickey Loomis do both jobs with the Saints and the Pels, actually have someone in place to run basketball, a basketball mind. And that's exactly what they did on Friday when they hired former Cavs GM and world champion GM, David Griffin. They reached an agreement in principle to make the former Cleveland Cavaliers GM, David Griffin, New Orleans' new executive vice president of basketball operations. Griffin is taking over for the fired Dill Demps, who was fired in the middle of his ninth season. Griffin will now be the point person for this franchise. He's only 45 years old, by the way. Let that wash over you. This man's only 45 years old. He's going to come in here. He knows how to build a team around a superstar. He did it in Cleveland. World champion. He knows how to do this. And this is the man, and he's going to work quickly. He's a sound basketball mind. He's going to come in there. More than likely, he's going to hire himself a general manager. Okay? And they are going to run the Pels as a first-rate organization. This is a tremendous knock-it-out-of-the-park kind of hire. Now, they're going to have to build on that with Griffin selecting the right coach. I don't think it's going to be Alvin Gentry. They are going to go quickly on this. They'll make a decision whether or not they will retain Alvin Gentry, and then they will hire, more than likely, a GM and a head coach, because Griffin is not going to mess around with the Anthony Davis situation. He's already publicly stated what he would have done in that situation when he was doing some analysis, and he said he'd trade him to Boston. He'd get himself Jason Tatum in return and some picks. Look, Griffin was the GM for the Cavs from 2014 to 2017, where they got LeBron James returned from Miami to Cleveland, and the Cavs won their NBA title. What did he do while he was in Cleveland besides win a world championship? Here's some highlights for you. As the GM, he also traded for Kevin Love. He brought that piece to give them that big three there. That was the big highlight. And he got LeBron to come. He traded for Kevin Love. He locked up Kyrie. And then he put all those other supplemental pieces around those guys, built up the bench. They went toe-to-toe with the Golden State Warriors, three straight finals. They won one of those, the famous LeBron James block game. Before he worked for the Cavs, and you're going to ask me, well, Ray, RP3, why isn't David Griffin still in Cleveland? Well, have you met that owner? He makes rash decisions, and one of them was that they decided not to renew the contract of David Griffin following the 2016-17 season, and that was one of the catalysts for LeBron James leaving, because David Griffin was a guy that he respected immensely. But ownership wanted to take more credit for what occurred there in Cleveland. But really, it was David Griffin that did the wheeling and dealing. He got LeBron James to come there on a contract that was favorable to the Cavs. He traded for Kevin Love. He put together all those other pieces, supplemental pieces that turned out to be big, like J.R. Smith and others. The guy knows what he's doing. Before he worked for the Cavs, he spent more than a decade working in the front office of the Phoenix Suns during a tenure with Mike D'Antoni, that when they had Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. Yeah, David Griffin worked in that front office when that team was constructed. This guy knows what he's doing. A tremendous hire. I don't think you're going to see Danny Ferry stay around. He's the interim GM. You think you're going to see somebody else come in to serve as the general manager. And Griffin will be tasked now to transform a franchise that went 33-49 this season. Has a lottery pick. and now has to deal Anthony Davis. But a step in the right direction for Gale Benson, Mickey Loomis, and the rest of the Pelicans ownership group, front office personnel, bringing in a guy like David Griffin. Tremendous hire. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, the one and only, the Dean Cain extraordinaire, king, Game of Thrones watcher himself, George Faust from KLFY.
You watch any of that Game of Thrones?
I have never watched a single episode of Game of Thrones.
I gotta get in on that. Maybe
I am bad about watching TV shows when they're on live.
As they happen.
And when they get off the air, then I'll go binge them.
I understand.
I'll binge watch them then. But I don't know. Everyone's talking about it. I was like,
It'll be a binge thing for me, too. It'll be well after the fact. But I hear it is incredible.
I hear it's incredible. But then people tell me how incredible it is, and I'm like, well, now my expectations are really high. And they rarely live up to those expectations. When we come back, George Faust right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parse III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. The Raging Cajuns had themselves a heck of a weekend. First of all, the softball team, Jerry Glasgow's bunch, are 18-0 in Sun Belt play. You want to know what that is? They've matched the best start in Sun Belt history. Right there with the 2004 team and the 2001 team. Best start in Sun Belt Conference history, 18-0. Because the Raging Cajuns softball team went on the road and got a sweep of App State over the weekend there in Boone, North Carolina. They return to action tonight when they're at Campbell, and then tomorrow when they're at UNC Greensboro. The baseball team, hey man, they took care of business. They got themselves a series victory over the weekend versus South Alabama as well. We're going to dive more into the Raging Cajuns having a heck of a good weekend with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on the Dean Cain of Acadiana Sports Media, the Chancellor, the Vice President, the top dog, if you will, the one and only, George Faust. Fausty, how are you this morning?
Doing great, man. How about you? I got demoted from president to vice president. What's up with that?
nice. Fausty, let's dive right in, my man. Let's talk about the softball team. They are consistently the best and most consistent program at UL year in, year out. And this year is absolutely no different. They're 18-0 to start Sun Belt play. That ties the best mark in program history for them in Sun Belt history. Why is this team just so dominant?
Well, you know, I think it all starts with the history and the ability of this program to be able to consistently win. I think it starts with, like, going back to Yvette Girard and her ability to kind of get quality talent to this program. And obviously this season she's not coaching. I mean, she's watching, but I think she set the groundwork. Then there was the low teams. They came in and they kept the bar high. And now Coach Glasgow, who knew what he was up against, really took care, because there was a lot of people who said, you know, is the Cajun program going to fall? And Coach Glasgow, to his credit, man, he knew he had a plan in place and he was ready to kind of execute that plan. And so far, he's done a phenomenal job. And I just think this program, for the most part, has been the shining beacon for Raging Cajun athletics. And it's the program that's come. Other than the 2000 year with baseball, I think it's the program that's come the closest to winning a national championship. In 2000, obviously, the baseball team finished in third place in the national tournament. So when you look at the consistency of the softball program, they are by far the biggest program, the program with the that has had the most opportunities to win a national championship. And if I had to put, I mean, if you, it's kind of like that bet, Tiger or the field. You know, if you had to put a bet on who would win a national championship first, well, the non-traditional, I mean, they've won national championships in water skiing is what I'm getting at. But I'm talking about the traditional, you know, the big three, the big four, you would have to say that the Cajun softball program is probably the team that that's going to get has the best opportunity to win a national championship because they've done it so many times already. It's just amazing. 18-0 is quite a feat, and Coach Glasgow is doing a phenomenal job of, you know, not letting that bar slip, and that's the key. I think a lot of people were questioning maybe there would be a drop-off of some sort. He's maybe doing it a little different than the previous administration is doing it, but the results are the same, if not better, just depending on who you ask.
We're talking to the Dean Cain, El Presidente, Vice Presidente, Big Chief, George Faust from KLFY. Fausty, let's switch over to baseball. You know, they get the weekend series, Sun Belt Series win, which is key. But the midweek, they got destroyed by Louisiana Tech, and then they lose to McNeese State in the midweek. And then they start off the weekend with a loss to South Al. So they actually, you know, went 2-for-3 for the week, but they did salvage the weekend series victory. What were your thoughts on how the Raging Cajuns baseball team performed this past week?
Look, I was very disappointed about the way they played in the midweek. I don't exactly know why that would happen. Like I know you get up for those games too. Even though it's a midweek contest, you're playing guys that you know, guys that you played against in high school. You know, you're playing for from a coaching perspective, you're playing for you know, bragging rights and recruit. Hey, look, we beat them. Why you want to go to that school? You know. It might not happen all the time, but, you know, it's another feather in your cap, so to speak. So that really perplexed me. I mean, I think that what was it, the Louisiana Tech game was a shellacking, right? I mean, it didn't seem like the Cajuns were even showed up to the ballpark that day. And then, you know, McNeese and UL, that thing to me is a back and forth affair. They're always good matchups, good ball games. And I think the proximity makes it exciting. And so you can kind of push those contests. I mean, the Cajuns went to McNeese and won that one. So, you know, a little tit for tat, if you will, with regards to that season series. The fact that they came back, I mean, they obviously lost the Friday night game to South Al, and then they take the two Saturday-Sunday games those two games. And what's great about that is, you know, hey, that's where it really matters, to be honest with you. You know, other than that, I mean, it's not cool to lose in the midweek, but to be honest, right now you're playing for a solid seeding in that Sun Belt tournament, so you can kind of get to a position where you can cruise through. cruise is the relative term to cruise through and get a position in that tournament, to where you can position yourself to win that tournament and maybe get a favorable matchup, which is going to be tough. If the bats, though, keep swinging like they are, I mean, look, that's something that I think they're – what was the stat I saw? They're 6-2 when they hit more than two homers in a game. So just keep swinging the bats, and hopefully that'll continue. The wins and the Sun Belt series wins will continue as well.
George, let's break down a little bit of the Wally Poniff Classic. It's a game that so many people love, and so many people, you know, take time out. There's folks that may not make it to the Teague to go see the Cajuns play because of their schedule, but they make time to go down there to Metairie, to the Shrine on Airline, to see the Wally Poniff Classic, which can be heard live right here on 103.7 The Game. tomorrow, pregame 6:30, first pitch at 7. Tell me a little bit about this matchup. I know we don't know exactly who the pitchers are going to be, but what do you like about this matchup for the Cajuns versus the Tigers?
Well, look, the great thing about this is kind of the same thing with McNeese and UL. It's that rivalry type of atmosphere, and you see your best come out. I mean, look, last year the Cajuns played LSU twice and played well against them, and so it's just it's one of those things where, okay, everybody says LSU's this great team, blah, 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 you know, and to their credit, they really are. Usually year in, year out, on a consistent basis, they're one of the top programs in the country. Now, the Raging Cajuns, they've been a top program in the country, and so it's kind of this competitive juice now, like, hey, look, there's some great storylines that go along with it because, what, they're an hour down the road from each other, and there's a lot of these players. Again, you know, Antoine Duplantis from Lafayette, there's all kinds of storylines. Brennan Brough comes back from LSU and goes to UL. There's all kinds of different storylines that are fun to watch in the contest. But in the end, it's an honor to be a part of that game. And that's the way Coach Robichaux approaches this. Is he, you know, Wally Poniff was a great ball player and a great person. And to be able to, for LSU to respect UL enough to invite them to play in this game, because they don't have to. You know, LSU could call Southern Miss, they could call Tulane, they could call Louisiana Tech, but for what, 4 years now, they've called. It might be longer than that. They've called the Cajuns to go play, and I think it's because of the quality baseball that Coach Robichaux it puts together, and that shows a little bit of respect in my mind from Coach Maneri to Coach Robichaux, and just the fact that they continually invite the Cajuns. And it's a big game for the Cajuns because, you know, every time you play LSU, I mean, look, Southern beat LSU earlier this year. And so every time LSU gets everybody's best shot because of just the way they're viewed and that they're, you know, the biggest school in the state. Most people are all LSU fans. There's a ton of LSU fans. So the Cajun fans, you know, everybody who plays them, they want to beat them. You know, so you get you play, hopefully, your best game against the best teams, bring your competition up, bring your level of competition up. And I think that's the way the Cajuns approach this game. And we'll see what happens. I mean, it's
George, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on the spring game, brother. You know, what impressed you from UL spring game on Saturday? Was it the offense? Was it Levi Lewis? What kind of stood out for me for the Vermilion and White?
Look, for me, what I really hope for the Cajuns is that they just continually get better. It sounds like from what Coach was talking about in the recent past that Levi's kind of got a little bit more of a grasp than everybody else on the quarterback spot and on the offense. So I think that's what is exciting me about that, because, you know, it helps to have experience at that position, because that's what football is. You know, your offense runs through your quarterback, and if he knows what he's doing, I think that's going to be a solid thing for the Raging Cajuns. Maybe they just having a little bit of stability at that position can help them out moving forward.
Perfect. Fausti, I appreciate you coming on as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, man. And don't demote me, man. Come on. See me at the El Presidente. Come on. What happened?
Sorry,
you're
Presidente.
Unless you're the president, then I'm okay with it. That's fine.
Oh, nice. Nice. Fausti, appreciate you, brother.
I'll be your vice president. That's why.
George Faust from KLFY breaking down all the Raging Cajun stuff for softball, baseball, and UL's spring game that occurred on Saturday. When we come back here on the debut episode of RP3 and Company, we will wrap things up with Uncle Lester. That's right, Les Miles, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. And let me tell you something. It was a jam-packed weekend, right? We had the Masters, Tiger, putting on the green jacket for the fifth time. First major win in 11 years. We had
By the way, I haven't bragged all show. Do you remember who won Cody Schutz picked in the Masters Challenge?
I was going to bring it up before we closed out the show, but my man just said, no, I want some recognition now.
Wait, I have waited three hours. I don't know if anyone else picked Tiger Woods, but if you did, boy, didn't we get into the catnip this weekend.
Yes, big up to Cody Schutz for picking Tiger Woods in the Masters Challenge.
Kaylee asked me, why'd you pick Tiger? It's the only name I can recognize.
LSU reinstated Will Wade. That his sabbatical is now over. UL baseball, softball was in action. LSU baseball was in action. There was so much going on. Dustin Poirier won the UFC lightweight championship. There was so much. The Astros swept the Mariners. We talked all about it on today's show. But the highlight for me, above everything else, was what occurred in Lawrence, Kansas, as Les Miles took the stage with rapper Rick Ross.
There's no cussies in this, right, Raymond?
I don't think so. All I do is win. That was Les Miles.
You have to find the video.
Along with Rick Ross on stage for Kansas's spring game concert event.
I wish we could have cut the feed to everything but whatever Les Miles' voice was being picked up in. Like, I want to drop the beat, drop the everything except Les Miles' voice.
No coach in college football has won the offseason like our boy Les Miles, who, by the way, will be in Natchitoches this summer to be enshrined, inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Les is an absolute treasure, and he goes to a program that's been the worst in the country by far. It's not even close. And he's gets Rick Ross, and they built it up. They even had a Rick Ross jersey on the field as a promotional thing, like on Saturday,
right?
Early morning Saturday. I saw it, and I was like, oh. He is making us talk about Kansas. Think about that. We are talking about Kansas football because Les, I know we ragged on Uncle Lester for eating the grass and not speaking in complete sentences and press conferences and losing to Alabama and being too loyal to his assistants and being pedestrian when it came to offense. But damn it, that man was fun to cover, and he is a fun coach, and he's making Kansas relevant. Whether or not they win, that's a whole different discussion. But Uncle Lester was on stage with Rick Ross, Cody, for a concert.
I mean, I've thought about this, okay? We've talked a lot about Les Miles since he's taken the job at Kansas and the things that he's doing, and he seems to be continuing the aura of Les Miles wherever he goes.
The Dr. Pepper commercial.
Yes.
He's a thespian.
Right.
This man is putting out mini movies and doing rap shows with Rick Ross. No one is living a better life in college football right now than Les Miles.
I think what we, as a people, we should have saw this coming, though, this just hot fire from all angles of Les Miles, because when he left LSU, he damn near disappeared for almost a year. You know, then he pops back up in these Dr. Pepper commercials. But prior to that, I mean, there was neither hide nor hair of Coach Les Miles unless you were looking for him.
Right.
All of a sudden now, he's back. He's making headlines. He's in the news. He is Uncle Lester once again. And we should have saw it coming. He had an entire year just about to, like, chill. And, I mean, you know, and from The Water Boy, the green book with all the plays in it and everything, like that red bow you stole from Mr. Coach Klein. I believe Les Miles has that same green playbook, except it's filled with just ingenious marketing ideas and not necessarily plays, because Les Miles runs 8 total plays from, like, 6 different formations.
He is such a good personality. He's good for college football. And I've said this. I know LSU fans are
like Steve Spurrier.
Right. LSU fans are like, well, he got tired. Yes, he probably stayed a little too long at LSU, and he was stubborn when it came to the offensive play calling. But if you're going to tell me that you don't think that Kansas football will be a winning program under Les Miles
in a handful of years,
it'll take him a while. They will be competitive, and they will be winning. Now, are they going to win the Big 12? No, of course not. Okay, they're not going to beat Oklahoma.
Could you imagine?
Okay, now if they did all
could you imagine?
Okay, but to think that Les will not have a positive impact on Kansas football and make them relevant and at least make them consistent, look, the guy's a good coach. You don't win as much as he did and recruit as well as you did, as he did, if you're not good at your job. Right. Now, he got into a rut, and then he had to go up against, you know, the evil genius in Tuscaloosa. Okay. Look, but he beat Saban in those early years of that rivalry.
Yeah.
He beat Nick Saban in Alabama. Then he started losing to them, and it snowballed on him, and then he started losing to Arkansas and other teams. Okay, but Les is a damn good coach, and he's going to do good there in Lawrence, Kansas. But just to get Les Miles on stage with Rick Ross was the highlight of my weekend. You can tell me about the emotional comeback of Tiger Woods. You can tell me about Dustin Poirier bringing the belt back to Lafayette. You can tell me about LSU reinstating Will Wade. That's all great. The Pelicans doing a great hire with David Griffin to run that organization. Hey, I will concede. But the highlight of the weekend for your boy, Rick Ross, Les Miles, duet. I want the live mixtape to drop. When does that drop? Can it drop by Friday?
We got to find it. It usually does. If they will, it'll drop on a Friday.
Or I want that image of him being on stage. I want that to be the cover of Kansas's media guide for football this year. I want that to be the poster. Rick Ross, Les Miles.
You're right.
Just on the cover. Tremendous debut episode of RP3 and Company. I want to thank all of our guests and our callers. I want to thank Cody for making me sound competent, which is a difficult task in itself. We'll be back on tomorrow, 6 to 8, right here on 103.7 The Game.